Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 111 of season 11 of Lou Drummond, the Daily Podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to begin yet another part of this 10-part series is Jay Cluett of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show once again, Jay.
Hang on, I'll just put this chicken down and I'll be right with you. Okay, sorry, yes, hello. Well, thank you for having me.
Are you putting the chicken down or you want the eggs?
I'm going to go.
Or are you going to get slapped?
You know? I'm not going to go get slapped.
Are you going to get slapped by the chicken or by someone else?
I'll take the chicken, I think.
Yeah. That's true. Be careful with the chicken and with the eggs.
Have you ever caught a chicken? You ever had to pick up a chicken?
Yes, I've picked up. Wait, have I ever caught one that was running around, or have I ever picked up?
I'll take either.
I have picked up a chicken. I've picked up a chicken numerous times that was in like a bin or a pen or whatever, and you have to lift them up and hold their wings together and stuff like that so they don't get away. Yes, I have.
Me too. We visited a farm in Scotland a few years ago, and we were being given the tour, and they were like, and here's our chickens and our ducks. If you want, you can try and pick up a chicken. As they do it, you stand behind them, and you reach down, you grab them, hold them by the wings. You can try and pick up a duck as well. You won't be able to pick up a duck. Ducks are too difficult to pick up. And so I picked up a chicken, and I turned around, and I picked up a duck. And the people that run the place are like, you caught a duck? What, are you some kind of like a duck whisperer? I was like, yes, I am a duck. And so that's one of my proudest moments, is that time I picked up a duck when I wasn't supposed to. This episode is now called Duck Whisperer, I'm guessing.
And you would be correct as of now, that is the name of it. nice guess there, Jay. Nice.
Been doing this a long time, Rob.
I know, but the way that the story takes us is what happens. You know, there's nothing you can do about that. You know. If you want to start talking about ducks,
yeah,
and call yourself the duck whisperer,
what's going to happen?
Obviously,
yeah,
that's what I'm going to jump out and use for that. So why not? You know, would you rather that it has something to do with a naked Tom Hardy later on? Probably not.
I mean, we'll see. I have notes.
So who knows? Well, maybe something will change between now and the end of this episode.
Maybe we shall see.
Exactly. So episode 111 begins with the opening titles of episode 9 and ends with Janovic saluting au naturel.
Standing to attention, if you will.
Yes. Possibly in more ways than one, but yeah. We only get to see a proper...
It frustrates me to no end. The spears didn't make a standing to attention or at ease, like some kind of pun referencing the situation. Like, it's right there. The camera crops up just above the groin, so it's not right there, but it's right there. He's literally standing to attention. But anyway, I guess they didn't need to do it because it's too obvious. But fine.
That's part of it, and I think also it has to do with the fact that Spears doesn't really care.
Oh, yeah, sure. He is preoccupied.
Spears is looting
preoccupied with theft.
He's not going to care. Exactly. He doesn't really care that Tom Hardy is having fun with one of the German girls.
Sure.
You
know? Yeah.
That's secondary to him.
Yeah. It feels like they made a mistake making this episode because there's a bunch of women in it. Did they mean for that to happen? There's like more than one.
Well, they're in Germany. What do you expect?
Sure, but
that's all that's left.
Just like comparing it to all of the other episodes in the series so far. It's like, hey, they let women be in this one. She's not a nurse.
That's right.
I mean, she could be.
Maybe she is. She's definitely tending to Janovic.
Yes, she's also definitely not in her uniform.
No. Well, maybe she is. Maybe that's her uniform. You never know.
Hey.
So part 9 begins, and we get the opening title, and it's called Why We Fight. So, you know, the last time you were on, we talked about, why they would call an episode title on episode 8 when there's two left, The Last Patrol, Partially because why we fight is even more important than the last patrol.
Absolutely.
From that perspective. Yeah. Because again, this is going to take us places that none of these men expected. But then again, that's what happens in every episode. But sure. That's besides the point.
Yeah.
And then the scene opens. It's April 11th, 1945. Okay, so if I remember correctly, we need to see if April 11th was a full moon.
and then do they show the moon? I can't remember if they show the moon in the episode. It's certainly not in this segment.
They've already reached Germany, and we're in Thalheim, Germany. Did you look up where Thalheim, Germany is?
Sure didn't.
Because you knew that I would.
Absolutely. I've been here before, Rob. Okay. Why would I do research for this show?
Is that the way it works? What's very interesting is that when you just search for the term Thalheim, you do not find it. And in the Banner Brothers Wikipedia or wiki page, it's actually called Thalheim. Thalham, which is a town close to Munich. Which is, again, very interesting that, you know, they slightly changed the name of it. You know, it makes me wonder if, you know, how it's referred to in the, you know, in the book itself. You know, does the book, I don't even think it's mentioned at all. You're doing a search on the book, trying to find the word Thalheim, or Thalheim, no, neither of them. So
I just did tried to search for it, and it came up with just Thal without the M on the end. Yeah. Hmm.
In the book or on the internet?
On the internet.
Oh, okay. I just
Googled Thalheim, Germany, and Thal, you know, Thale, is what came up.
Right, there's a Thale. And I'm not sure if it's the same one that they're referring to here, because Thale doesn't look as if it's right near Munich. But Thalheim is, and there's also Thalheim. Again, I guess these translations are make things a little more difficult to try and figure out.
I could drive there in 13 hours, apparently.
From where?
From where I am now.
13 hours? That's actually apparently, not so bad.
I mean, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to.
Okay, so we'll talk tomorrow when you get there.
Sure. I need to be at work tomorrow. That's a lot less time than I thought it would be. And that's also, I would be driving a lot slower than that.
Well, I also know you don't like to drive, so, you know.
Yes, that's why. I'd be crawling along.
So just tell your wife to step, put pedal to the metal.
Oh, I could walk there in 189 hours. It reckons I could cycle there in 2 days. That is optimistic.
That's really interesting. The cycle in 2 days? Wow.
I would.
They're saying that when people cycle, they only do it a fourth of the speed of driving. That's still pretty impressive.
Sure, and it's not allowing any time to sleep. This is saying it's a 51-hour bike ride. Which, hey, there's people out there that do that. I do not intend to be one of them.
51 hours straight? That's just absurd.
Yeah. It's just... Well, I mean, there's people that go for, like, that run for a weekend. Like, ultra city marathon
people. Not everyone's
people.
Forrest Gump.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, he stopped to sleep.
And when I needed to go, I went.
Yeah, you know. You gotta go, you gotta go.
But yeah. So, you know, after the title of telling it, back to the fact that April 11th, you know, was also not a full moon. It was once again a waning crescent moon. So 2 months later.
Okay.
You know, we once again get a waning crescent moon. So It's a good thing that everything in this, most of the things in this episode take place during the day, as opposed to at night, you know, because you only have a waning moon.
Yeah.
And it opens very interesting because we get a sound of music and a violin being played. And it, you know, basically it sets the tone for what's going to happen throughout this entire episode. You know, you see people working in the background. You see people, see MPs walking around. You see what looks like a concerto going on. You see a woman in a scarf walking by, looking at a picture, crying. You see men carrying bricks, things like that. Basically being very very productive for whatever it is that they're doing here. And I mean, the camera shot is great because it gives us a 360 of all the people, you know, as they're doing all the work here. And I mean, I'm going to have questions about this later in the episode when we actually talk about what it is that they're doing here, because this makes no sense. The other things that they force them to do later on make sense. Having them clean up the area here under military force, just again, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, why is that needed?
I didn't assume they were cleaning up under military. I thought that maybe this was people that lived in this area trying to salvage anything they could from the wreckage. Because you have the lady who's crying, she's holding a photo. It's like a broken photo frame. And so she's looking at, so I assume she knows the person in the photo frame. And so she's crying for like, this is my husband. This is my husband. He is passed now. I'm crying at his picture. And so the people like rummaging through the rubble, they're finding like there's two guys bringing down a table with two legs. So, like, this is salvageable. We can repair this. It can be a table again. And there's people finding chairs that can be used. They're just like looting, going through their previous homes, trying to find anything that they can. Because they say later in the episode that it's anyone aged between 14 to 80. And there are some, like, children in this pile of rubble that seem younger than 14 to me.
Yes, but the older people do not look like they're over 80.
No, agreed. But it's the children being under 14.
Right. Okay, that's fine. But those kids aren't really doing anything but sitting there on the rubble, you know, playing with the
that's
rubble.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, it's not as if they're helping. No, I'm just looking at it from the perspective that here you have, I mean, they're playing music for them. So that would make, that would be very strange from my perspective that, anyone who's seen this entire, anyone who's listening has probably seen the entire part. So why don't we just discuss it? Because there is a concentration camp not that far away from this town. So they ended up forcing the people of the town to deal with getting rid of
the bodies
right. And properly either burying them or burning them or whatever it is that needs to be done. Okay, and they basically said, how did you people not know that this was going on? And that was their theoretically that was their punishment for not trying to interfere or stop what was happening, which obviously I don't think that, you know, townspeople would have had that option anyway. That's a separate issue. But they were basically forced under armed guard to go do that. So, you know, showing this as the first scene where you have music being played and, you know, you see people going through the rubble. It is very possible what you're saying, that they're looking for salvageable stuff. But okay, if they're looking for salvageable stuff, A, why do they have to have armed guards that are around them? And B, if these people are under 80, that means they should be working with the bodies and not looking for salvageable parts. Because, you know, if someone has an excuse that they can't go help, you know, medical excuse. So I'm sorry, I can't carry bodies, but I can actually pick up a broken table to try and help fix that. that doesn't sound like an excuse that's really going to hold water.
Sure. Yeah, I guess my reading was taken from my first go through, where I didn't realize this was heading to the concentration camp.
Right. Okay. That's fine.
Real fun episode this one was. So And I had assumed, like, oh, these four people, that they've got their instruments, they lived here, they know where their violin was hidden. It miraculously survived the bombing, and so they're just going to play music to entertain the people, their fellow neighbors, and whilst they salvage from the wreckage, they're going to be the entertainment. They're going to be the grasshopper playing music whilst the ants do the work, kind of thing.
Okay, all right, that's fair. I mean, a possible interpretation is that they're looking for things that they can use to, as firewood to help with the burning of the bodies or whatever. I don't know.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, because they are carrying wooden and linen products. Yeah. You know, and they put the wood in like a little wagon. That's kind of. I don't know. I mean, the people carrying.
Yeah, the bricks don't really help with that. The bricks are more like, we can use these to build something else again. And like, there's a guy with a metal bed frame. I think it's more, and there's lots of like scraps of wood they're not taking. So I think the stuff they are taking is to be reused, because it's all stuff that's in the better condition. Okay. So I think maybe they're taking, this is stuff we can use, and then after that we'll sort through for stuff we can burn.
It could be. Again, it just, to me, it's very strange that these people, that they're allowing them to go through the rubble, as opposed to, unless they've already finished all the work of dealing with the bodies. Yeah, that's also a possibility.
Maybe.
You know, because we're not sure of the exact time reference between everything. You know, we don't know if this happened before or after, or how long after they find the the concentration camp. Does that work? I don't know. And then the shot takes us up into like one of the buildings, and we see a bunch of the men from Easy Company just sitting there. And Les goes, "Hey, one thing about the Krauts, they sure clean up good." And Lieb guy goes, "Yeah, all you need is a little Mozart." And Nixon pops out from behind them and says, "Beethoven." Lieb guy looks at him, "Sorry, sir?" He goes, "That's not Mozart. That's Beethoven." So, first of all, I think this little scene is great because it tells us so much about Nixon. I mean, we've been dealing with Nixon, and we're going to be dealing with it even more. His drunkenness, and how he's dealing with his demons. You know, but we also know that he's an educated guy, and so he knows the difference between Mozart and Beethoven. Yeah. You know, I know that the two of them are musicians. That's what I know. I couldn't tell you, if I was listening to something, I couldn't say, oh, this is Beethoven or this is Mozart, unless there's something specific that I already knew.
I'm exactly the same. I classical music is a huge gap in my musical knowledge, which is already quite limited. But I just think that if this is Beethoven, it sounds pretty good for music that's generally played with pause.
More.
I thought, like, great big.
Correct. The only Beethoven music that I know is, Ode to Joy from the Ninth Symphony, which obviously is the Die Hard music, and it's, you know, I think of it as Die Hard music as opposed to Beethoven.
Sure, and that's not even something I can be like, yeah, that's Beethoven. To me, I was like, yeah, that's classical music. I don't know who played it.
That's what the Nakatomi players were playing, you know, when John shows up at the party. That's what it comes down to, you know, their quartet that we never see ever again. You know, somehow they managed to hide all of their instruments and somehow get out. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's probably gonna be it. We can have these musical instruments and musicians for one day. We're not paying to hire them for longer than that. So after that, we just shoot from that side of the room. The musicians are over there somewhere. Don't worry.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Well, again, as we've talked about when we were watching Die Hard, there are less hostages than you would think that there should be at that party. You know, so like.
I mean, there shouldn't be any. It's Christmas Eve.
That's true also.
There should be nobody there.
Except for Hollywood. There's nothing to do at home.
Sure. She has kids. There are kids at home.
Kids at home. She's John's on his way, so you know, might as well get as much work done as possible and not have to deal with
it. He's gonna go stay in Pomona.
Well, she doesn't know that yet. You know, she doesn't know that Cappy retired. Come on. Because she goes, oh, Cappy retired. There you go. Captain Roberts, you know, retired to Pomona. Pomona.
Yeah.
Right. You'll be spending half the time in the car.
I watched David Lynch's Inland Empire recently, a film I did not enjoy. And they talk about Pomona. I was like, hey, I know where that is.
Well, no, you know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
Exactly. But again, it's nice to see, you know, these guys just sitting there, you know, watching. I mean, we basically, Percante's there. We have Liebgott, we have Luz, we have Webster, who, you know, apparently is now counted among them. You know, we see Bull in the background also, and Luz, and, you know, then Nixon shows up, which means that he's, I guess, sober at this point. Because he's able, or maybe he needs to be drunk in order to be able to differentiate between Mozart and Beethoven. That could also be. You never know.
Could be.
You never know. And then the shot fades, and then we're back to 1 month earlier in Sturzelburg, Germany. You know, they pick some great names for these places. It's a good thing it's not all made up. You know, because you know, you have to try to figure out where all these places are. Where are they? Right. So. That's right.
Draw a fantasy map. We have a cow.
Yeah. Well, Sturzelburg is a real place.
With three cows.
It is in the North Rhine-Westphalia. Sure. Yeah,
they have cows.
I can't tell you exactly, you know, what it's close to. But again, this is the place Easy Company is now situated at this point. I mean, looking at the map, I don't see anything. Maybe it's not that far from. I see something that says Düsseldorf Gareth. I don't know if that Düsseldorf is.
It's between Düsseldorf and Cologne.
I haven't been to the area. Düsseldorf is
But
yeah, Düsseldorf is north of Sturzelburg.
I work with somebody from Essen, which is just north of Sturzelburg.
Okay, so you can ask him if he's ever been to Sturzelburg and has he seen a little barn that possibly has chickens? You never know.
It's I will ask her. Yeah.
So we've taken a time travel trip back a month earlier. So we are now in the middle of March. Again, I don't know what day, so I can't look to see if there's a full moon or not. But my assumption is that if it's 1 month earlier, daylight. The odds
doesn't
are
matter.
It's the middle of March, and you know, based on what we said last time you were on. The full moon was at the very end of February, so therefore it would be the very end of March also, from that same perspective. So, and we get to hear a whole bunch of farm animal sounds. We hear mooing, we hear cows mooing and chickens clucking. And you know, we see both Percante and Luz trying to figure out what they're going to do. And Percante goes, "Come on, chicken! All right, this one's got some, George." And George goes, you grab the chicken, and I'm going to grab the eggs. Great. All right. He says, just grab him by the foot. Come on, chicken. All right. This thing bites me, friend.
The worst way to grab a chicken.
That's right. Well, as we talked about before, you got to pick them up by their wings. You know.
Yeah.
All right. If this thing bites me, Frank, I swear I'll shoot you. you know, there are a lot of chickens there, so they potentially are able to get a lot of eggs. Potentially, and then you know, we see light shine into the barn, and a young German woman enters the barn completely shocked, apparently, you know, hoping to come and actually get the eggs for herself. You know, and I think there's going to be an egg standoff here between you know, between the men of Easy and this young German girl, and she completely gets startled and decides that she's leaving. You know, she just basically runs out of there. Yeah. And, you know, she's probably quite scared that someone is going to try and defile her. You know, that's my impression here. That, you know, they probably have this perspective that American soldiers are going to be coming and, raping and pillaging and looting. So the looting part, we know they did.
I mean, that's what they're doing at the moment. They're currently looting eggs.
Right. That's right. And
possibly chickens. She doesn't.
That's right. And Les starts chasing after her and starts trying to talk to her and goes, hold on. And
yeah, Les really, like, my opinion of Les turned in this sequence.
Yeah. I'm very curious.
He's quite forward.
Yes. I'm quite curious if what George's son thinks of this scene.
Yeah, and it's not until the end of the next episode when you have like the little postscript where they said, but because of Luz's character, 1,600 people attended his funeral. I was like, hearing that straight after watching the opening of episode 9. No, I don't know. Maybe he turned around at some point.
That's sure he did.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Again, in the book, the story about the eggs is actually slightly different because it's different characters. So on page 207, it says, Webster told a story that speaks to the point. I'll go back a little bit to talk about it's worth pausing here to see the Americans as conquerors through the microcosm of E Company. They took what they wanted, but by no means did they rape, loot, pillage, and burn their way through Germany. If they did not respect property rights in the sense that they commandeered their nightly billets without compensation, at least when the Germans moved back in after they left, the place was more or less intact. Of course, there were some rapes, some mistreatment of individual Germans, and some looting. But it is simple fact to state that other conquering armies during World War II, perhaps most of all the Russian, but including the Japanese and Germans, acted differently. Webster told a story that speaks to the point. Reese, who was more intent on finding women than in trading for eggs, and I, made another expedition a mile west to a larger village where there were no GIs. Like McCreary, Reese tended to show an impatience with hens and a strong interest in skirts, regardless of age or appearance. He'd tell me, "There's a nice one, boy. That's a honey. Speak to her, Webb. God damn." Since I was shy, however, and those females invariably looked about as sociable as a fresh iceberg, I ignored his panting plaints. Besides, the Frau's weren't apt to be friendly in public, where the neighbors could see them. Maybe indoors or at night. Finally, we came to a farm where a buxom peasant lass greeted us. Reese smiled. After I'd gotten some eggs, Reese, who kept winking at her, gave her a cigarette and a chocolate bar. And as love bloomed in the garden of D-ration, a newly issued food package, and Chelsea's, I backed out of the door and waited in the sun. No dice. Reese later reported, I returned home with a helmet full of eggs, Reese with a broken heart. But it was, as he said, good fraternizing territory. He tried again the night before the 6 o'clock curfew went into effect. No luck. Had Reese been a Soviet, German, or Japanese soldier, this little non-incident probably would have turned out differently. So you see, it's an interesting way that they tell this story quite differently. And it's,
sure.
It's not
the same. And like, when it annoys me a little bit when Luz exits the barn and he's like, I didn't need him to say that she socked him in the jaw. I just, like, the fact that he's already like nursing his chin and his jaw area is enough. Filmmaking wise, I feel like that's enough. Like, they don't need to reference it at all. It's clear what's going on, and the fact that they spell it out bothers me a little bit. I feel like it's dumbing it down.
I do agree with you on that part. Frank tries to stop him as he's running after. He goes, but George, and he goes, I'll be right back. He screams out towards the German girl, hold on a second, hold on, hey, come here. I just want to talk to you, that's all, I just want to talk. And she responds in German, and he goes, okay, look what I got, a chocolate bar. And then again, he pulls out the chocolate bar. They seem to like offering people chocolate bars in this series. He goes, you like that? You like chocolate?
Huh? Sure. Yeah.
Prakanti then just says to him, hey, Luz, why don't you just leave her alone? Frank, why don't you just leave me alone, okay? And he turns to the girl and goes, you don't like chocolate? He goes, I don't like chocolate either. How about this? Cigarettes? Camel? Yeah, you like that, huh? And Frank goes, come on, Luz. Frank, please. Why don't you go make your omelet? Well, you ain't getting none of my eggs, blockhead. And he just starts walking off. He goes, Jesus, my friend just keeps talking. Here, I got two packs here. Give it to your friends or something. why don't you come and sit down? Want to sit down here? Come on. That's it. You know, is the biggest question that I have with the way that they portray this, again, they don't portray it that he's going to be forcefully trying to convince this girl to be with him or anything like that. You know, it in some ways it seems as if they're trying to show that he's trying that Luz is possibly seeking some humanity, you know, like a personal connection here. Again, it can be seen in both directions. Because he's not being forceful with what he's doing.
I think the scene cuts away, I think the scene could, if it played out, if we watched it, could become forceful. Like as it's happening, he's offering her things. She's clearly in a frightened state of mind. He's like edging closer and closer. I can see that scene becoming more forceful and more serious than it is depicted. That's the start of a scene. You don't know how the scene could end. So I feel like it could go in many different directions, many unpleasant. So I am glad that it both cuts away and also doesn't end well for Luz and he gets socked in the jaw. So that's, I guess, being told that he gets socked in the jaw is nice. We get that little confirmation. It didn't go well for him. And after being socked in the jaw, he didn't then become more forceful and pursue it further. So I guess we get that confirmation as well. What he's doing is underhand, but it could be worse. He's trying, he failed, exactly. He leaves.
Yeah, I love the detail because we see that, you know, Frank is walking with the helmet that's filled with eggs, but it also, like, they grabbed part of the hay with them. He didn't, like, just take the eggs. He took the whole scoop. Like, he scooped it up, everything, and he's, like, picking out the hay from the whole thing.
I mean, you're not going to spend time sorting the hay from the eggs when there's a live chicken held just above it. He's just going to grab it and go.
How deep do they do they bury the eggs or anything like that?
I think it's just they're in there amongst the hay. So you're just going to scoop it out into your helmet, get out of there.
Okay.
On to the next one.
Again, I like the detail.
I like
the detail from it. And Luz comes out of the barn, rubbing his face, and runs towards Percante. He goes, "Hey, Frank, hold on." Because Perk, Jesus, come on. Frank turns around and goes, "What?" And, you know, as they're about to have this big conversation, we see a Jeep go by that has Nixon in it. And Nixon does not look pleased at all. Something's bothering him. And we'll only find out tomorrow what it is that's actually bothering him. And then Luz says, "That Captain Nixon?" He goes, "I think so." He goes, "What the hell is he doing in a harness?" "I don't know." He goes, "Maybe we jumped into Berlin. The war's over." He goes, "Yeah, huh?" And then Frank looks at him and goes, "So what happened?" He goes, "No dice with the Fraulein?" "We have no dice. She smacked me in the mouth." "Tell you what, though, Germany's looking like pretty good fraternizing territory, huh?" Frank goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Did you lose your cigarettes?" So he knows, you know, Frank knows Luz well enough that he gave her the cigarettes. But, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, these guys are close enough that they really know what's going on. The shot changes, and we're in the scene that we talked about at the beginning, where we see Janovic having his way with a willing German companion. So we see Janovic having sex, and, you know, we get a lot of sounds of the two of them enjoying themselves.
Sure.
And then at a certain point, Janovic goes, hold up. You know, he hears something from outside, and he hears a door open from outside also. And then you can hear in the background someone screaming, "Janovic!" And Janovic then motions for her to be quiet. And once again, we hear, "Janovic!" And he realizes that he's not in a good situation. He jumps off the bed as someone bursts open the door. And he goes, "Oh, shit!" And then he sees that it's Spears, and he just salutes him. And he goes, "Sir?"
Why's the one?
And, I mean, this is actually a great way to end this segment. You know, as you know, we don't get to choose how it gets broken up. You know, once you choose whether it's going to be a minute or 5 minutes or chapter or whatever it is. And I just like the way that this you know, quickly ends with, you know, we see that the German woman has covered herself up as quickly as possible, but Janovic doesn't need to. Yeah, well, he didn't have time.
Sure.
He has an extra second that he's, that he, because she doesn't know who's about to come in. He knows. You know, he's aware of the fact that Spears is the one who's coming looking for him. And that's how this segment ends. That's right. He doesn't just see him, he sees all of them.
Sure does. Yeah, and so, of course, this is Tom Hardy. This is Tom Hardy's first episode of this is the intro, I think.
I don't think so.
I don't recall seeing him prior to this. He's only in two episodes. So this is this one and the next one.
Okay, so I guess this is the first time that we get to see him.
Yeah, and this is prior to him being in Star Trek. And Black Hawk Down, he's only been in a couple of shorts, so this is essentially his like first like main acting role, I would say. He looks so young.
Would you even call this a main acting role? I don't know.
Well, I mean, he's playing a character with a name. His roles prior to this are Soldier and then Number One, in a short film called Get a Grip.
Well, I was going to say, in the Star Trek universe, if you're called Number One, that's a pretty good thing.
Sure, but this was not in Star Trek. In Star Trek, he's called Shinzon. But so this, I'd say, yeah, he's not a main character in this, but he is featured. You know, he has a name, he has lines, he has a couple of scenes he's in here and there. So I think this is his. He has to do a new scene. If I were Tom Hardy and I was doing my CV, this is where I would start. So yeah, I like Tom Hardy.
Okay, well, I mean, as we know, in general, a lot of these small part actors in Band of Brothers, this is where they start their CVs.
Absolutely. For obvious reasons. Yeah. Just imagining, like, what if Venom was in Band of Brothers? What if Venom was in this scene?
What if Bane was in the scene?
Back in bed, Eddie. Yeah. Eat Spears. Tom Hardy's fun. He doesn't do a city voice in this series, which is a shame, because he's good at city voices.
Well, he doesn't need to. I always am reminded about his performance in Warrior, which I really like.
Sure, yeah. Very good at Warrior. He's always good.
He was really bulking up at that point, getting ready to be Bane.
Yeah. All right. I'm glad I got the start of this. I know I get the start of all the episodes, but I'm glad I get the start of this episode. Because it's you know, this is a lighthearted scene here. The bit with this episode gets dark. It's sobering, this episode. And I don't envy the people who are talking about the latter half of the episode. I can't imagine that's going to be an awful lot of fun. So I'm glad I'm here at the start.
Okay. That's fair enough. Again, it's always fun talking about things, so why not?
Sure. But some scenes are more fun than others.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. But I'm sure that when I get there will be what to talk about.
Oh, I'm certain there will be. Yeah. It's not in this chat, but one part of this episode that really did irritate me is we find out later on that Hitler has killed himself. And one of the characters, I'm not sure which one, says, why couldn't he have done it 3 years earlier? Save us all a lot of trouble. And 3 years earlier than that would still be 3 years into the war, as far as I'm concerned.
No.
And it's just
But it's before the Men of Easy show up.
Sure, this is it. You goddamn selfish Americans only care about the part of the war that you're fighting and not the stuff that happened prior to them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you Yanks. That's the only thing that bothers me a little bit about the series in general is, yeah, it follows Easy Company going through the war. Right, what about all of the half of the war that happened before America even heard about it? What about that? Hey, what about the rest of us? But I get it. You pick the Easy Company trajectory is a nice encapsulation of the American involvement in World War II. Middle to finish.
I think you should begin a project and do something from the British
perspective, so that you can show.
I feel like someone should. I don't think I'm the right person, but I feel like somebody should. Maybe there has been one, and I just don't know about it because it wasn't very good. I don't know. But I feel like it would be harder. It's probably harder to find a through line of like this is one group of people were there at the start and at the end and went all the way through the fighting of it. I don't think you probably got that nice clean line to draw. If you did the British involvement. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. You don't get that many opportunities for that.
Yeah.
Which is one of the things that makes the Mander Brothers quite unique. That they're able to, find, you know, a company of men who actually spanned a lot of what happened, which makes sense.
Yeah, I just would have liked whichever character is said, like, should that 6 years earlier or somebody else in that scene to go, like, well, I mean, even 3 years before that would have been good to save everyone else's trouble as well. But no, nothing. It's just like this war lasted from 1942 to 1945. Okay.
Well, what's he supposed to say? You know, would have been better if everything had already ended, if Hitler had killed himself in 1933. You know, it's like, so we understand.
Would have been, sure.
Right.
I know. It's just watching it. That was my thought watching. I was like, hang on a minute. A lot of people had died before then.
Yeah. Correct. No, I'm aware of the fact that that's an annoying one, and when we get there, we will touch upon it, I'm sure. But again, as you pointed out, this is showing the perspective from the men of EV companies, so it's a little more difficult to say, okay, let's try to be all encompassing with everything that's going on.
I get it. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So I think that's what it comes down to. Okay. So is there anything else you want to mention about this 5-minute segment or part 9 at all?
No, I got my grievances out. That's fine.
Okay, I know it's not Festivus, but you still are able to get rid of your grievances, so that's pretty good. I give you credit for
that. Next up is the wrestling. Feats of strength.
There you go. Good luck with that.
Yes.
All right. So we will now play the usual game for Jay of World War II trivia, and we're gonna see.
Strap in, everyone.
we're gonna see what type of questions Jay gets this time. You know, are they going to be ones that he's familiar with or not? Who knows?
You
can guess. You think they won't be?
I think they were. I think let's go with I'll get two right.
Okay, that's an interesting guess, and let's spin the wheel, and we'll see whether Jay's prediction will be able to come true or not. Who knows?
Only the wheel knows.
Yes, it does. It always does.
The wheel knows all.
It doesn't know all, but it knows how to try to...
The wheel knows all. Do not doubt the wheel. The wheel and I have gone on quite the journey over the series.
I have a feeling you're trying to imitate Venom. Is that what you're doing here?
Not at all, no. The wheel knows all.
Okay.
We have those already.
Okay. I'll give you that one.
I can't do that for too long. That hurts my throat.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Film A Matter of Life and Death from 1946 is all about a British pilot lingering between life and death and must plead his case before the Celestial Court. In order to
David Niven.
And the question that I was about to ask you is who is the main actor there? So there you go.
David Niven. The reason why whenever they show a British pilot during World War II, they give him a posh voice is because David Niven played him. And it didn't sound like that.
See, there you go. You got the first one.
I think I've talked about that before.
I saw this movie years ago.
Anyhow,
I really probably should see it again.
It's great. It's fantastic.
I think it also has another
name. Anyhow, what?
Doesn't it have another name?
I've only known it as A Matter of Life and Death, I think. That's the Wallace and Gromit short, A Matter of Life and Death.
For some reason, I kept thinking that it had another name. Maybe I'll think of a different World War II movie from that time. It's also called Stairway to Heaven. There you go.
Sure, that makes sense.
But I do prefer A Matter of Life and Death.
Me too.
I think that's a much better title. Yeah, for this movie, but yes, I'm glad you got that one. You see,
me too. So far, I'm right. I got one. I just need to get one more.
There you go. You've lowered the bar for yourself.
There we go. Stop doing that.
All right. So now your second question. The 1949 film Battleground was nominated for how many Oscars, and how many of them did it win as a bonus?
Battleground, did you say?
Yes.
No, I have not heard of this film. So I will say... No,
because I've talked about it before, but yes.
I am not familiar with this film. I may have heard someone talk about it, but I'm not familiar with it. As such, none. Not a single one. Trick question.
No nominations or no wins?
Both.
Well, obviously, the nominations are going to be no wins. No, it was nominated for six Oscars.
Okay.
And it won two of them. It was nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Supporting Actor for James Whitmore, Best Editing. Those are the four that it lost. And then it won Best Story and Best Black and White Cinematography. So it won two. And it was nominated for a total of six.
Well.
Okay, your streak is continuing. You have, yeah. So let's spin the wheel again. See what we get. Okay, I know that you've seen this movie, but you told me that you saw it a long time ago. So this will be a question about the Bridge on the River Kwai.
Okay, I've seen it once.
You've seen it once. So my assumption is you're not going to know specifically the way to answer this question. But
I can give you the name of the river.
You could, but that isn't the question that I'm going to be asking. No, that doesn't help as much. okay, what happens to Captain Reeves during their attempt to reach the bridge?
That is going to depend on who Captain Reeves is. Because I can't.
Reeves, okay, I'll pay this. Captain Reeves is the demolition specialist.
Does he blow himself up?
You really haven't seen this movie in a long time. Nope. No. okay.
Does he fall in love?
It's the same thing that happens to Trini Lopez's character in The Dirty Dozen.
A film I saw have seen also one time before I watched Bridge on the River Kwai, so even longer ago. Stand on a mine will blow himself up. I don't know. Did he run away? Did he catch pneumonia?
Do you remember Sleepers in Seattle when they talk about The Dirty Dozen?
No, because I haven't seen that film.
Okay, so that's a good reason why you wouldn't remember it. Makes sense.
Yep.
Okay, so the answer is he dies when his parachute gets caught in the trees and he breaks his neck.
Sure. Okay.
You know.
Fair enough. Okay.
Another famous. Way of showing what happens to people when they parachute.
Yep.
Yeah. For some strange reason. You know, they like showing that a lot in movies. Just, I guess, to show you how dangerous it must be. Who knows? All right. So let's spin the wheel for a fourth time. So far, Jay, you have two more shots to try to reach that pinnacle point of what you were hoping for.
I need.
I have a lot of faith in you. Spin the wheel, round and round and round it goes. Okay, in the 2016 film USS Indianapolis, Men of Courage, what was the mission of the ship?
So the ship? They were delivering the bomb.
That's correct.
Yeah, I've seen that film. It's bad. It's a bad, bad film. It's got sharks in it, but it's still a bad film. And Thomas Jane's in it. Yeah, they were delivering the ship, the bomb.
And so it was Tom Sizemore. So it was Nicolas Cage, surprisingly.
Sure, yes, yeah. But I watched directed it for the sharks and for Thomas Jane. Absolutely, of Jaws the Revenge.
Yes, which has two cuts, where he gets killed and where he doesn't get killed.
Yep.
Yep.
I like the one better where he gets killed.
Yeah. I'd like either one. I don't mind that film at all. I enjoy Jaws the Revenge because it's silly and has a personality.
And it was able to buy Michael Caine his new beautiful house.
Beach house, yeah. Yep. Which is quite lovely, I hear.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he says. Exactly. All right, so you see, you've reached your point. Let's see if you can surpass it.
Sure, or just tail spin off in the last one.
I don't care. It doesn't really make a difference. Okay, can you name one of the two stars of the 1980 film The Sea Wolves?
Oh, I haven't seen it. But...
Sorry, one of the three stars. There we go. And one of them we just talked
about. Is one of them Roger Moore?
Yes.
Oh my God, okay. You said we just talked about one of them?
We just talked about one of them a few questions ago.
A few questions ago. Yes. David Niven?
Yes, very good.
Hey, and can he get all three? Probably not. Guess somebody who might have been in a film with Roger Moore and David Niven in 1980. Are we thinking British? Are we saying yeah, British?
He's American.
Third person nope, British?
He's American.
American. Damn. They always get in there somewhere. Ernest Borgnine.
No.
No, that's fine. Who's the third one?
Okay, he's an actor who was nominated for... He was nominated six times for Best Actor and won in 1962. Sorry, he was nominated five times for Best Actor and won in 1962. For playing a character named Atticus Finch.
Sure. Oh, I can't think of that guy's name. I'm picturing him. He was the wrong man in Hitchcock's The Wrong Man.
No, he was not. That was Henry Fonda.
No, that's Henry Fonda. Who am I thinking of? God, what is this guy's name? This is awful. I've only seen To Kill a Mockingbird once. I can't remember his name, Rob. My brain's not working. I can't remember the guy who played. What? Can we go with initial? Can I get the first initial again, please? G. It's not Gary Cooper. That's somebody else. Oh, damn it. No, what's the second initial?
His first name initial? Is Greg. G. How's that? Or a form of Greg.
Greg?
A form of Greg.
Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck. Gregory Peck.
Yes.
Has he been in a Hitchcock film?
Of course he has.
Am I just getting...
Yeah, sure. He has. He's been in a Hitchcock film. I'm trying to remember which one it is. Was it the Paladin case? Yeah, he was in Spellbound and the Paladin case. There you go. Yeah, I got that right.
He's Spellbound is what I was thinking.
He's in Spellbound and the Paladin case. Wow, I haven't seen the Paladin case in years. I probably should rewatch that.
Me neither.
Have you ever seen it?
I have. I've seen almost all of Hitchcock's films. Just a handful I'm missing.
I've seen
But yeah, Spellbound is one I've seen a few times. So that's one I'm thinking of.
The truth is, I'm less of a fan of Spellbound than I am of The Paradigm Case. From what I remember.
I don't remember The Paradigm Case that much. But I remember Spellbound because it's different. And it's got like the Salvador Dali dream sequence in the middle. But yeah, it's not one of my favorites either.
Fair enough. Okay, so now let's play the daily game that everyone plays, not just Jimmy.
Hey, I was right. I got two. I got two right.
No, you got more than two.
No, I got two. I didn't get Gregory back. We can't count Gregory.
But you had to guess one out of.
Oh, I did. Sorry, I got. You're right. I got three right then. Hooray!
There you go. See, you overreached your expectations. That's great, Jimmy.
Which therefore made me wrong in my proposal.
Okay. All right. Well, if you want to look at it from that perspective, yeah.
Just.
Yeah. Understandable. Okay. So now let us once again play the daily game of name that World War II movie. And, once again, it's very possible that this will be something that you've had trivia questions on. Who knows? So let's spin the wheel. See what we got. And round and round the wheel goes. This is a film from 1951, starring Richard Widmark and Jack Palance as Marines fighting in the Pacific.
Pass.
Okay. I can give you is that the name of this film is connected to the hymn of the Marines.
The hymn of the, I don't know, the Marines, yes, had a hymn.
Yeah, I'm sure you've heard the song. You ever heard that? That tune before? I can't use the words because I'm going to give it away.
It's not ringing a bell. It's probably been in a film.
Well, it's the name of this film.
I don't. Sure, but I mean, I've probably heard the song in a film. But I don't have any guess at the moment.
Okay, so you have the first three words to the shores of Tripoli.
The shores of Tripoli.
The shores of Tripoli is the second part.
Is that the name
of the first phrase? And the first part of that phrase is the name of this movie. Something, something, something to the shores of
Tripoli. You're saying this as though the phrase "the shores of Tripoli" is something I should have heard before. It's okay. Well, I have no recollection of that term.
Okay, so the song is "From the Halls of Montezuma to the Shores of Tripoli. We will fight our country's battles." Nope, you never heard that before? Okay, so that's the Marine, hymn.
Not ringing
any and the name of the movie is The Halls of Montezuma.
Okay.
DG, you gotta watch more World War II movies.
Well, I was never gonna get there. I don't. I've seen enough.
Apparently not.
It's too many.
All right. So, Jay, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Jay Cluett? Besides,
sure, they're getting sick of me at this point, I think. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Sure. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, where you can hear me and Mark Hoffmeyer talk about Deep Blue Sea and films like it. This year there have been we love Rennie Harlan and all of his films. So this year has seen two Rennie Harlan films come out, and we've covered them. Capped off his Strangers trilogy, and Deep Water will have come out by the time this comes out. We're looking forward to a great deal at the moment. And this is 2026 is our year of reptiles, so we've been covering a bunch of snake and crocodile and alligator films, and possibly a Komodo dragon film as well. Who knows? We'll see. So yeah, right. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
Great, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, I will be back tomorrow with a guest who has been waiting in the wings for a week. yeah, well, it's
not to apologize.
It's okay, Matthew likes to wait. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go.
And, that's fine then.
I will be back again with Jay in just a few weeks when we will cover the beginning of part 10.
Indeed, we will.
So I'm looking forward to having Jay back in 2.5 weeks for that. And so until then, hurry!
Hooray!